Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right. Welcome back, Jug Buds, episode 8, I think. I never know anymore. I think it's 8, though. Yep. Thanks for tuning in. Let's just do it. So, this one actually should be shorter. I'm just going to say that every episode, and it'll never happen, but this one should be, because I'm going to do it a little differently. I only have a couple things I really want to talk about. I'm not going to do a full roundup, and then I'm pretty much just going to answer questions and we'll get out of here. I'm tired and I don't feel good, and I call the shots. So that's what we're doing today. Thanksgiving week. Exciting. I don't even know why places make people work this week. It's like a day and a half, or depending where you work, 2.5 days, and then you're out of there. Just give the fucking people a day off or the week off, will you? Jesus Christ. Anyone got any good plans? I'm not talking to anybody, so I don't even know why I asked, but let's just start talking about hockey. Jesus Christ, shut up, man. So if you follow along, you know that I got to go see a lot of the guys in action, in person again. So Thursday and Friday, I went to Boston College. And then Saturday, I went to UMass Lowell to watch some first of action versus Lowell. And then right after that, I zoomed on down to Northeastern for the Northeastern BU game. No Wild kids in there, but Matthews Arena is sick. Anyone around Boston has a chance to go. Actually, any of those three arenas, Conti Forum, BC, the Sangha Center for ULOL. Sangha Center is sweet. It's like, it's really nice. It's a sweet place to watch a game. And then Matthews Arena, Northeastern, it's the oldest building in use for sports, and it's really cool. So if you have a chance, I would go. But yeah, so let's just talk about that real quick. Thursday, I'm at BC, and I'm up hanging out pretty much, actually definitely by myself in the press box. And the dude was just like, I didn't know if you wanted a spot or if you wanted to just like roam around, but you can just do whatever you want. So the seats are right next to the press box, and I kind of start meandering because I like to watch from different places if I can, if it's possible, just to like look at, get different views of the ice. And I make my way down a couple rows into some seats just because it's like a bench area. And I look 10 feet to my right or down. I can't remember where I saw them first. And who do I see? Ray Shiro and Matt Hendricks. I thought for a second Matt Hendricks was Judd Brackett, and I almost pissed myself a little bit. I was like, oh my God, should I tell him that I have a podcast called Judd's Buds? And then I realized it was Matt Hendricks, and I was like, oh, fuck, Jesus Christ, thank God. But no, I didn't. If anyone's wondering, I didn't go up and be like, hey, what's up? I'm Spoked Z on Twitter, and I have a stupid wild account, or a stupid wild prospect podcast that, you know, you guys should listen to if you need some insight into your own players. You know, I didn't do that. That would have been psychotic. Hendricks probably just beat me up. But it was interesting watching how they were, I don't even, they were talking to some other dude too the whole time. I have no idea who it was. I think Ray Shiro probably watched about collective 9 minutes of the game. Other than that, him and the older dude were just hanging out, bullshitting, telling stories. Like, Ray Shiro was maniacally laughing and like storytelling the entire time. And I think Matt Hendricks took about 12 pages of notes. Like, he was just going. He was in the conversation, but he was also paying attention. So it was cool, though. I did not know that they would be there. Thursday, it's a Thursday night game, so there wasn't a ton of people there in the first place. So there was actually a lot of NHL people there. It was interesting. A lot of scouts. Don Sweeney from the Bruins was there. But it's always funny. You got, they all wear the same, all the scouts wear the same shit. All black, slick back hair, a cup of coffee, notebook, and they just kind of hang out. They picked a pretty good game to go to, though, with McBain getting a hat trick and BC just beat the fucking wheels off Maine 6-2 in the first game and then lost in the shootout the second game. But yeah, it was funny. Saw Shiro. He just seems like a natural born beauty, just a funny dude. And, you know, Hendricks was just, and he probably went through three pens and about six notebooks by the end of the second period. So, but yeah, they picked a pretty good one. McBain with a hat trick. I think Nestoranko had an assist on one of them. But yeah, that was interesting. So moving on, let's talk about Iowa because we have to. Matt Boldy's back. He's back. And he's playing with Marco Rossi, and they're playing with Kyle Rau on that top line. And it literally took him less than 3 minutes, Matt Boldy, to get his first sick assist. He's behind the net. He's got someone coming to hit him. He has the puck on his backhand, goes quickly to his forehand, little baby sauce out front, and Rau smacks it home. Rossi also had an assist on that one. Then Rossi gets an assist on Rau's second of the game. So Rossi finishes this game with three assists. He's buzzing around all night, dishing. There's one, two, three, four, five different fights that game. Dewar got in a fight. Shaw got in a fight. Lazat got in a fight. Churchman. Cremarosa got another misconduct. I don't even know what he did this time. I wasn't paying attention. And Matt Boldy said, geez, this kid's shot is a joke. I mean, the first one was just an absolute bombs away 1T on the power play. I'm pretty sure it's just Samir Rossi. Or maybe it was Lazar. I can't remember. And his second of the game comes, he just darts down the slot, receives a nice pass from Rossi, I think, again. Nice little baby sauce. And he, gosh, little fucker, settles it. Snipe. Just a natural score. I mean, the kid can do just about everything. So he's back. The ankle would appear to be healthier than mine. So he just shows up after not doing anything. But he was like skating 5 days ago. And now he's just ripping goals. Like, thank you, keep the change. So they beat the absolute wheels off Tucson 5-0 in that first one. Dewar looks awesome. Obviously, like I said, Rossi, Boldy, incredible. Who else was looking good? Hicketts. I mean, he's just, I don't know. He's just never going to not score, I guess. He looks great. Addison gets called up to Minnesota. So he misses the second game. He looked good in the first game, too. He was looking good on that power play. Beckman looked pretty good. I think he had an assist in both games. No, just the first one. But, you know, now he's got a little bit lesser of a role now that Matt Boldy is back with Rossi and Rau. But that line of, I thought in the second game, they sucked in the first period, the whole team did. In the second and third, they were dominant. But Zane McIntyre, the old Bruins pick, he kind of put Tucson on his back and just shut him out after Boldy got one. Another clap bomb. But I thought second, third period, they were awesome. At the end of the game, they got the extra skater on. There's like 10 seconds left. Marco Rossi has a one-timer. He hits the crossbar, and puck bounces out. Forget who got it. But then they fire it over to Matt Boldy. He rips one off McIntyre's face, and it goes out. So they nearly do it again in the final seconds, just like Minnesota's here. Apparently just going to keep doing. But I thought the first period, the whole team, other than that second line of Beckman, Dewar, and Shaw, they were great the whole game. But everyone else seemed like they took that first period off. Now, they also were without Mermis and Ottenbright for COVID protocol. Addison gets called up. They can only call – I think they can only get Summerby up from the ECHL. So they're going 5D. And they said Soucy's was skating. I don't even think I saw him. So they might have also had like 11 or just like just been down a skater the whole game. And I mean, the first period it looked like it, and then it was all Iowa for the rest of the game, and they looked fantastic. But interesting second game, just given the fact that everyone was either dead or in Minnesota, or just like not available. But yeah, that's Iowa. 10 minutes in. What should we do next? I guess I should talk about the games I went to, huh? So like I said, I'm all over the place. Thursday, BC, Maine. McBain hat trick. I'm curious to see what happens. He's a senior this year. First line center for them. Leads them in points and goals, whatever. All three of his goals look almost identical. They were just quick one touch from in tight, from nice passes. He's just a finisher. Like, that's just what he does. And one of the questions that I got, like, earlier in the week, I think it was Friday on my way to the game, people were asking about his skating. And that's one thing I wanted to go see, because I knew it had been somewhat of, like, a concern for Jack McBain. And I like seeing it in person, because skating issues can mean a whole list of things, right? Like, is he slow? Does he have bad form? Does he struggle to keep up? Is it like a wind issue? Right, left? Is that the problem? Can he not move laterally? And I think if you're going to pick one thing that he, like you would say, is a downside of his skating, it would be the lateral movement. But the way he plays, it doesn't really matter. He's not slow. Like, he's not the fastest player on the ice, but it's not like he's always behind the play. He more than keeps up. He's where he's supposed to be. Like, it's not a speed issue. I mean, and the only reason I say, like, maybe the lateral movements, one area that you could be like, it's not great. But at the same time, like, it's not very often he even needs to. Like, it's just not the way he plays. Like, he hammers guys along the wall. He battles. He's super skilled. He can, he's one of those players you, like, stick handle in a phone booth or whatever. And he's very deceptive with the puck too. Like, he'll send guys flying one way and then just skate out with the puck the other way. And then he's just a menace in front of the net. And I'll tell you, that dude loves to finish hits. There've been a few times he's actually kind of like taken himself out of the play a little bit. Like, I think it actually happened against Maine in the second period. He went to go finish a hit, on a defenseman who was like either just exiting the zone or like clearing the zone or like hitting a first pass, and like Maine went down and scored. But like, the kid hit the pass, saw McBain coming, and he was like, he's really going to hit me. And I mean, it was probably 3 seconds after. And I mean, he deleted him, like absolutely deleted. It was hilarious, but like also probably shouldn't have made that hit. But like, whatever, it's college hockey. They're going to do that every time. So it doesn't really matter. But I mean, so the thing with him, right? Like, right, he's huge. I think he's like 6'3", 6'4", 2-something. I mean, he is a man amongst boys in a lot of games, and he is like you just can't get the puck off him. And in front of the net, like, he is tenacious. So he's a finisher, right? Like, he's not like a natural playmaker. He does have some sneaky, like, sick vision. Like, there have been a few times he and Nesterenko have really started to look. Nesterenko's a left shot, plays on the right side of him. They've started to look really good together. And, like, you'll see they'll go back and forth between the two up the ice, and then, like, McBain will every once in a while, like, slip a really nice saucer pass back door. But, I mean, just the way McBain plays, the skating isn't really the problem, right? Like, if you're going to say the reason he won't make it is because, like, how dynamic is your scoring? Like, are you really scoring in a bunch of ways? But at the same time, he is just, like, a finisher. So I think any team would like to have a kid that's 6'3", 6'4". He can move. He's not slow. I'd say his skating's fine. He plays hard, and he knows how to put the puck in the back of the net. I think a lot of teams would want that guy. So I don't see it as – like something that's going to ever hold him back from playing games. It's just, is he going to really be able to separate himself from other dynamic scores. And as a center, if you're like your natural, if the biggest part of your game isn't playmaking, then you really have to be a good finisher and you really have to score. So we'll see. I think you'll see him in Iowa next season, especially there should be a good amount of turnover. But he's an interesting one to watch. Maybe that should have been the guy I said last week. Someone's like sneaky player that could be on the Wild in 3 years or whatever. I wouldn't be shocked if McBain was one of those. Now another player that like now all three times that I've gone to watch, I'm like, holy shit, is Nesterenko. He is sick. So he's playing on the right, on that top line. He's playing on the right side of McBain. And I mean, he's the playmaker on that line. So they play with Brandon Crew, a Vegas pick as well. But I mean, the puck is on Nesterenko's tape almost the entire time that they're on the ice in the offensive zone. And I mean, he's just so patient. He's got some crazy vision. I tweeted a video of one of the passes he made. The puck came to him along the wall and he had like a one-time snap slash slap pass across the ice to Cruz. But I mean, it split like three guys and he went to go give McBain a tap in. But McBain had his stick lifted. And that was on Friday, the game they lost in the shootout. So I didn't know Hockey East did that, which is cool. Still counts as a tie, I think. But I think it just counts like the shootout goes for like divisional points, maybe. I don't know. Who cares? But he's sick. Nesterenko, he's a fun player to watch. And he is very confident. He is not worried about getting benched for hanging on to the puck, that's for sure. He loves to have the puck on his tape. And something that I'll be interested to keep watching for next season is you look at BC now and their top two centers, Jack McBain's a senior, Mark McLaughlin's a senior. When you watch Nikita Nesterenko, you can tell, like you can see he's a natural playmaker. He's a natural center, and he is. And he's a left shot playing on the right side right now. But that, I mean, the way that line works is he's got the puck almost the whole time. McBain pretty much just like is like a power center, just running guys over, winning the puck along the wall, getting into the point, getting to the front of the net, every once in a while dancing someone or like along the wall or whatever. But Nesterenko will have it, and he's moving around with the puck, but he wants it like all the time. He always wants the puck. In the second game, he actually didn't get credited with a shot, which I thought was, maybe he didn't. But, I mean, he was by far the most noticeable player for BC, or at least one of them. Him, Kuntar, the Bruins pick, McLaughlin was really good. I think McBain was okay. But Nesterenko was unbelievable, and he almost set up a game winner. The overtime period was sick. At one point, I think Nesterenko was out there for like a minute and 45 seconds straight, and he probably had the puck for a minute. But he's a very fun player to watch. He's a slippery little bastard. So he's another one to keep your eye on. But I think next season you'll probably see him slot in at center when McLaughlin and McBain are gone, and that could be interesting. That could be a lot of fun. But, yeah, he looked good. He looked great, actually. And then in that first game, Marshall Warren played. The second game, he didn't play. But that's not anything crazy. They're just getting some of the other guys' minutes against a shit main team on a back-to-back. He looked amazing. Again, he didn't get credited with, like, anything. But I know I watched him block, like, two shots. I know I watched him shoot on net, like, three or four different times. But a lot of that game, I thought him and St. Ivany were the best pair of the night. But he looked great. He's not really getting any power play love, but a lot of time in the PK because I couldn't stay out of the box. And he was just really good. He was keeping guys wide, good stick to poke pucks out. A couple of really smart heads up passes as Maine's making a change. He picks his head up to go retrieve it. And instead of taking his time, he sees who's usually Nesterenko. But he would just rip a pass up the ice and create scoring chances that way. So he looked great. So again, I thought Shiro and what's his face, Hendricks picked a pretty good BC game to go to. Now let's talk about UMass Lowell versus UConn. I think the exact words I used were, first off, is ... fun. Couldn't care less about defense. Like, he just doesn't look like he could be bothered to try doing it. He's, I'll be blunt. He looks terrible overall. I mean, UConn sucked that game. Other than like Johnny Evans, he looked pretty good. He did. He had a bad game, and then that kind of got him scratched. But I mean, they got their asses whooped 3-0. LA Kings prospects Ben Meehan and Eric Andre were unbelievable for Lowell. I think Andre scored twice. Meehan had like 8 shots on net and 3 blocks. He's a defenseman. They looked really good, and UConn just kind of got their asses whooped. But yeah, so the thing with him is, what was he, a second round pick, I believe? You can see it. So he has first round talent. He's got all the tools. He's got good size. He's a decent skater, at least. Super skilled, and he's got a shot. Like, you love watching him shoot the puck, and he scores goals. He didn't get a single shot on net this game, but you could see it every once in a while, whether it's he's receiving a pass under pressure, and he'd like the way that he collects the puck, it's just different, right? Like, there's those guys that go in the first round that it's almost like when they receive a pass, you're kind of sitting there like, yeah, no, the puck belongs on his stick. That's where the puck should be. And it just does with him. And there are a couple of times that he was taking there were a few times where I was like, why are you even passing the puck right there? Like, he was getting pucks out at the offensive blue line with two guys draped over him, and he would still come away with it. Like, no problem. Like, he wasn't even looking. But, you know, you kind of wonder if it's like an engagement thing or a compete thing on a nightly basis, because every once in a while he would look like he was going to do something, and he looked into it. Like, there was a really bad penalty and he was pissed. He was going over their box chirping at the kid. But then just other times he just looks like he's a passenger. So I would say I picked a bad game to go to, and I hope he'll be back around here soon, because I want to go see him again. I'm not going to like pass up. Because again, this is pretty much what I've seen on video when he's not scoring. So that's the problem too, right? Like, when you're not scoring, what are you doing for me? Like, what are you doing to impact the game if you're not scoring? And the games that I've watched where he's not scored, like, there have been a few that he's just taking dumb penalties, or he's just there. Like, you just, the only reason you know he's out there is because you're looking for him. Like, he doesn't do anything that like pops. But again, he's got good size. He's a decent skater. He's got those NHL caliber or projectable tools offensively. I just wonder where his mind goes sometimes, because, I mean, he's on the periphery. He's like looking. It's almost like he's just waiting for the puck to come out and like squirt loose into the neutral zone for him to pick up and then go down and score. But again, I'm not going to judge the kid on that one game I go to see him in person. But like I said, though, it's kind of like what I've noticed watching him. What are you doing if you're not scoring? Sometimes it's a whole lot of nothing, which is why that a kid like that doesn't go in the first round. But we'll see. He's still young. So those are the games I went to. Let's just go right into questions.
The NHL season is underway, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. Doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection, however they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, don't worry about it. DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN, throw down $1 on any NHL game, and win 100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net, nets you a big win with promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I don't even have them. Oh, yes, I do. Okay, that's my phone. All right. Let's find them. Okay. My guys at MNW Prospects, Wild Prospects and Young Players. If you follow me, you probably follow them. They always have every update, like, immediately. So follow them if you don't. Having seen both live, who impressed you more, Firstov or Nestoranko? What did you like and dislike about each player's game? Well, I guess I kind of just touched on it, but by far Nestoranko. Like, it's not even close. What I like about Nestoranko's game, like I said, like, I love watching him and seeing that even though he's a left shot playing the right side right now, he's a young kid too. I think he's a sophomore. Maybe he's a junior. I don't know. But you can see that he's got the vision of a center. He's a natural center, and he's a damn good playmaker. Like, very good. And it's, like I said before, he's the one that's doing a lot of the work in the offensive zone in terms of creating those chances. McBain does a lot of the dirty work, so it kind of just works out well between those two. But I love his playmaking, and I love his vision. His passing is so good. The shot's okay, but that's not really why you want him on the ice anyways. Like, he's going to be racking up assists. But he's a really fun player to watch. He's bigger and smaller than I thought. Like, he's tall. Like, he's like 6'1", 6'2". And I was like, oh, I thought you were like 5'10 for some reason. But he looks like a beanpole. He looks like he's like 150. But yeah, I guess he's like 175, 180. So it's not even that crazy. But the one area I didn't like, or that he needs to work on, I guess, would be that strength, especially in the defensive zone. I think sometimes, too, his mind kind of wanders. He's another kid that, you know, he's a lot of offense and less defense, but he's not like defensively inept or anything like that. But sometimes you'll just catch him gliding around, straight legs. So I guess that would be the one thing. Because he does actually compete. Like, he's not afraid to go engage in battles along the walls, but a lot of that comes in the offensive zone and not so much the defensive zone. And sometimes, just out of laziness, he'll take a dumb stick penalty. But he's a young kid, and you'll take that all day, given how good he is with the puck on his stick. Like, he is very good. He's really the reason I want to go keep watching those BC games. He's very fun. Like, very fun player to watch. Like, he's got the puck most of the time he's on the ice. It's on his stick in all three zones. So, first off, like I said, the good part of his game is, he's a scorer. He's a sniper. He's got a great shot when he uses it, or when he puts himself in position to use it. And he's got really good hands. Again, his skating is not great. It's not bad. It's good enough. It's not going to hold him back or anything like that. Offensively, he's really good. Again, like I say, he's got the tools, right? He's got NHL projectable tools. Size, shot, skill. High hockey IQ in the offensive zone. But then, like I said before, you ask, what do I dislike? Just about everything else. Specifically in the defensive zone, it's just, it doesn't look interested. I wonder, I think I've said this before, I don't really like to question or say that a guy's compete slow, because I've never met these fucking kids, dude. Like, I have no idea. Sometimes a kid's just fighting it and whatever. Like, I have no idea if he's naturally, like, competitive. But if I was going to question it, it would be after games like this where, like I said, it's, if you're not scoring, what are you doing? If it's nothing, then that's not great. That's not going to get you the NHL. So, I would have liked to at least see him try a little bit more. But like Nestoranko too, he's not afraid to engage in the board. Like, he throws his weight around too. Like I said, he's got a good frame, and he knows how to use it. It's just, are you using it all the time, or just sometimes. And again, if you're not scoring, what are you doing? How are you impacting the game? And specifically in this game, it was literally nothing. And he got himself scratched. So moving on, next question. Let's see. What is a good reason for people not to get too hyped and start asking for Boldy to be called up after his first few games back? And that's from Cooch. Shit. I just scrolled away from it. I forget what his actual at is. At Skull underscore Vikes. But yeah, Cooch Williams, my guy Cooch. So what's a good reason for people not to get too hyped? Well, it's been two games, first of all. Second of all, like Beckman, like Dewar, if they're going up there, not even Dewar, but like Beckman and Rossi, people need to don't even ask Rossi. Don't even ask for Rossi. He's not going to. Or I don't know, maybe he will. But he shouldn't. I'm sure they want him to get the full season of the AHL. For right now, let him keep playing. Let Matt Boldy keep playing and continue to gain confidence in the AHL. No reason to rush him now. They're fine. I mean, I think St. Louis has probably just finished their walloping of Vegas, so I think now they're in first place maybe. But let him continue to play a normal pro hockey year in AHL with Iowa. And specifically, I'll tell you what, it's been, I mean, they played preseason together, so I guess it kind of started there. but it's been wild. Huh, didn't mean to do that. To see how quickly he and Rossi have kind of created some chemistry. Like, they look unbelievable together. Like, they are just playing past, playing take or keep away from the other, like, and they are both defensively solid, so they work really well in tandem already, like way better than I thought this early. Like, it made too much sense for them to like ever not gel together, but like these first two games have been unbelievable, even on stuff like breaking out of the zone. There was one play where forget which defenseman it was, but they send a puck up the wall and you can see Rossi is in the middle of the ice behind Boldy. Boldy's on the wall and you can see Rossi just bark something out and continue skating up, and Matt Boldy staples himself to the wall and just one touch pass through the legs off his skate, I think, or no, it was with a backhand for a breakout to Rossi. Rossi and Rao go the other way and get a scoring chance. But stuff like that, they've just gelled so well together already. I'd like to see them continue to play together so that when they are playing together in the NHL, they've been doing it for a while and they can just cook. So I guess that would be how I would answer your question, Mr. Cooch. That being said, though, Matt Boldy is probably the closest to being like ready. Again, it's been two games, but I mean, he was flirting with making the team out of camp, right? So it's not crazy to want to bring him up, but I mean, again, it's been two games. Let him and Rossi cook these motherfuckers in the A, and then eventually the NHL. Cooch also asks, is Fiala still on the team after the trade deadline? I see everyone been reading those Russo tweets and then listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast with Merrick and Friedman. And it sucks. I do think this is most likely Fiala's last season in Minnesota. Really sucks because he's awesome and he's really kind of found himself since leaving Nashville and coming to Minnesota. But it's just the money thing, right? With those buyout cap hits coming, he's going to get paid. He's a damn good player, and there's plenty of teams that are going to want him. But guys like him and Greenway, who are restricted free agents, who are ready to, like, they're both ready to make some serious dough. There's just no – there is no dough for them to have, to be given to them. So that's why you see guys like Rem Pitlick get claimed. You know, you let the young kids come up and on those ELCs or on lesser deals – because they're ready to go, but this is probably his last season in Minnesota, just as a cap thing, unless they get really creative. But I don't think it'll be before or at the deadline. Just because what are you getting back? Like with a Fiala trade, you're not, I think Friedman said it today. Like if you're trading Kevin Fiala in the middle of the season, it's to get better now. Right? Like there's no point to losing one of your best offensive weapons. I mean, yeah, he's been struggling lately and flirting it a bit, but I mean, we all know what happens when he gets hot and we know how good he can be. It is usually, but you're not trading him and taking a player back who is making more or is under contract for a while. So unless it's like some kind of rental deal, which feels kind of crazy, you're probably looking at futures. So draft picks, next two drafts are going to be very good, by the way. And maybe more prospects. So to me, that's a summer deal. Yeah, you could get more for him now, but I don't really know what it is that you're getting for him if you're going to trade him now. Like, is this like a part of like a hurdle deal or JT Miller, something like that? Maybe, I don't know. But just the way they have to approach trading Kevin Fiala, it just feels like a picks and prospects or picks and futures, which is more likely to be in the summer because you're not going to get those picks and prospects now when they literally can't help you this season win a Stanley Cup. So I think that will happen probably in the summer before the draft. Greenway, on the other hand, I could see that happening at or before the deadline because right now, if you lose Greenway, then there you go. You bring up Matt Boldy or Beckman or whoever, those guys that are ready. And not making 2-1, getting ready to make at least, whatever, 3, 3.5. But those guys are ready and ready to rock. So that's okay if you get the picks and prospects for Greenway now. Moving on. Oh, God. I don't know how. At Puck Ova Glass. And the name is Kerevin Fialazov, I get it. Better Wild Pipeline, BC or WHL? WHL. First of all, you got three guys on BC and you got five or six in WHL. WHL, you got Lambos, Masters, Hunt, Bankier, Pillar, Novak. So, I mean, even if you want to go player for player, you know, you look at the defensemen, you got Kyle Masters, very good player. Carson Lambos, elite. Damon Hunt looks ridiculous. So you'll take all those guys over a Marshall Warren. I love Marshall Warren. But, I mean, ceiling, you'll take the WHL guys. And then, you know, Pavel Novak for forwards, Pillar, Bankier. Yeah, I mean, I think, again, you look at the ceiling of all those guys and you're probably taking the WHL guys. But the pretty good problem to have that you got a couple studs on BC and your other prospects just happen to be better. Nikita Nesterenko could make some noise, though. You never know. Next question. James Seidel, sorry if I said it wrong. At J Seidel, sorry if I said it wrong. 1623. Is Josh Pillar or Pillar? Still don't know. Helping drive the scoring, or is he more of a passenger on his line with Stankoven? So maybe you listened and you've heard me talk about that with Bankier. So it's different with Pillar. First of all, no. Does he get a lot of his points in playing with Stankoven? Yeah, but Stankoven's also one of the best centers and players in the WHL. So anyone that's on that line, I mean, a lot of your points are going to come with playing with Stankoven, and he's going to be driving a lot of that play. But Pillar does a lot of the work himself too. Like the puck's on his stick a lot, and he's also making chances for himself. Sometimes it's from going and hammering somebody on the forecheck with the puck and either skating out front and getting a shot or feeding Stankoven. But he does a lot of the heavy lifting there too. Like a lot of times he doesn't do it as well as Stankoven because Stankoven's footwork is ridiculous for a kid his size. How much power he gets with his strides is ridiculous. But Pillar a lot of times is just walking the zone with the puck, like going for laps and then just unleashing bombs. So I would say he does a lot of the heavy lifting on his own. But yeah, sure. Are a lot of his goals assisted by Logan Stankoven? And yeah, but he's a natural. He's not a center. Like I always was hard on Bankier about it because Bankier is a natural center and I wanted to see him play center, which he's doing now. And a lot of times you'd find Bankier on the periphery or just like kind of hanging out and getting a tap in. Or like Pillar and Stankoven are just mucking people up in their own zone, going up the ice, and then Bankier gets like a rebound, whatever. So that's why I was harder on Bankier because he's a natural center. So I want to see him do the playmaking. But I mean, Stankoven's always going to drive 90% of the play that he, of that line, whatever line he's on, it's going to be a majority of the time it's him driving play. And you don't really need your winger to, especially when your center is Logan Stankoven. But Pillar does a lot of the work himself too. So I would say he's more than earned all of his points. Like he doesn't just get free gimme points. And then Hideki, who everyone knows, replied to that and said, or Caden Bankier for that matter. And like I said, Caden Bankier was getting a lot of his cookies from either just like tap into the power play or he just happened to be the right spot, right time after Pillar/Pillar and Stankoven like just go to work for like a minute and a half in the offensive zone. Now, Bankier has been playing center, struggling through it, but that's like I said last week, that's fine. Let him figure it out. If he's a natural center and the hallmark of his game is playmaking, I want to see him drive a line. Now I just finished rewatching their one game from this week. He was fine. He didn't do anything, he wasn't bad or anything, but I need to see the puck on his stick more. Especially now that he's playing center on that second line. Like I just don't see it enough. And sometimes he's just drifting out wide. So maybe he is like a natural winger. I don't know. If you're going to score, it doesn't matter. I mean, his line, he was +2 with like a shot or two on net. Again, he was fine. And he actually did pretty well at the faceoff top. I think he went 11-for-21 this weekend. So it like brings him up from like 30%. But for me, just watching him play, the puck's just not on his stick enough. He's like Pillar. He's the right winger on that first line. He has the puck more than Bankier does as a second line center. Now the kid's young, so everyone should be like, "Dad, see the kid sucks. He's young and he's playing center again for the first time in a while. Let him figure it out. He's got plenty of time. You don't need him to come up now. You don't need him to figure it out right now." So he's on a really good team. Most nights he looks really good. And now he's just getting back into playing center again. So it's fine. But, yeah, I wasn't super jazzed about this past game, but he's trying. So he did draw one penalty, got fucking murdered. This dude that's apparently 6'8", just absolutely killed him along the wall with a hit from behind. It was bad. Popped right up, though, and they scored like 5 seconds of the power play. So, okay, next question from Austin Keller. Sorry if I said it wrong. @loco_enchilada. It's a pretty good one. If Boldy gets called up this season, what line would you like him to be on? Sliding with Ek and Foligno, maybe? Well, I mean, I could see that. I mean, it's not crazy. Like, especially if, let's say, Jordan Greenway gets traded and now there's a roster spot open and Matt Boldy you want up. Easy transition. Could be interesting. He could be pretty solid option on that line. It's three guys that are very good defensively, so shut down line that can score. Yeah, sure, that could work. You know what I would kind of be interested in? I don't even know if it would really work all that well, but it intrigues me, is like a Fiala Goudreau Boldy line. That could be fun. You just got Goudreau out there being silky and just chucking sauce all over the place. Fiala buzzing around doing laps and then eventually just like doing all the playmaking probably and just feeding Boldy for one-timers, or Boldy just doing his thing. Yeah, that could be fun. Maybe put Hartman there. I don't know. instead of Goudreau. I think the bottom line is I'll take him anywhere unless it's the fourth line, like getting Duhaime and Rem Pitlick minutes, right? Like, we don't, there's no point. If you're going to call someone up to do that, just call Duer up. Because you don't really, you're not calling up Duer to be like, we need you to score. If you want, if you're calling Boldy up, it's like, yeah, because he can score and he's ready to go. So I would just, any realistically, like, the, this is such a weird hockey team with their line combinations. It feels like most of the playmaking is done on the wings, but I don't know. But either way, if you're going to call him up, first of all, he's going to be playing more than 10 minutes or 12 minutes, and he's got to be utilized offensively with the idea that you're putting him in a position to succeed via scoring. So I don't care who he plays with, as long as it's, you know, in an offensive role. So again, I think Fiala, Goudreau, or Hartman, and then Boldy could be fascinating and possibly very funny. I don't know. But I mean, a natural transition. Yeah. That line of like a Boldy, Ek, Foligno, I could see that working too. And then I think I just got one. I did. Is there any way acquiring an LTIR contract could help us manage the upcoming cap crunch? I almost understand how it works. Not really. I mean, I guess because you are going to be right up against the cap pretty much. So like, for people that always ask about LTIR, the only time using LTIR makes sense is if you literally don't have cap space and you have to use it. Like, that's the only way. Like, you can't, like, there's no point to have, if you have like $5 million in space and you want to add someone, then like LTIR that's making $7 million, so you can go $2 million over the cap. I don't even think you can do that, first of all. Maybe you can, I don't know. But there's no point in doing that. So, I mean, if you don't have to, I wouldn't. But sure, let's see. What is the cap? Let's see what they got for next year. I can't remember how much they have. Dun, 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 live podcasting. Dun, dun, dun. All right. So they're slotted to have $15.5 million. That's not a lot. And you got to do. So Fiala's up, Rask is up, Greenway's up, Pitlick's up, Bjugstad's up, Sturm's up, Goligoski's up, Ben's up, Merrill's up, Kakinen's up. And I mean, even guys, then you go like, if you look at guys in the AHL, man, none of these guys are going to need like one ways or anything. Yeah. So, I mean, you don't really have a ton of space, so I guess, sure. Like, if you wanted to do that, then you could, I guess, depending on who it is that you're going to go get. But I don't know. Sure. Let's just say, yeah, fuck it. Go Kucherov. Who cares? Trade for Kucherov. That'll do it. There you go. Is that it? That might be it. Folks, 46 minutes. Yeah, that's even still too long for this, considering I cut it down dramatically. Let's see. Did I get any more? I feel like I'm missing one. Nope, I think that's it. All right. So if you're upset that there's no roundup or anything, sorry. Or if you enjoyed me talking for 3 hours straight, sorry. I need to go to bed. And hopefully wake up in the morning because I feel like shit. So if I don't wake up and this is the last thing I did, worth it. All right. Next week we'll be back with a full episode, I promise. See ya later.